Live from Auburn, the sports capital of Alabama, this is The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7. And online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Hello, everybody. Welcome in to the Wednesday edition of The Drive. I'm still having trouble. Memorial Day, I think, made everything seem like it was a day earlier this week. So we're getting toward the end of the week quicker. No, it's the Wednesday edition of The Drive. Bill and Dan here in the studio. And we'd love for you to join us. There is a lot to be talking about today. Yesterday, of course, we talked a good bit about the baseball regionals, which Auburn will get started early on Friday, weather permitting, with a noon start against Milwaukee. But we can talk more about baseball. But today there's more news coming out about college athletics from different directions. Obviously, one of those directions is south of us down in the Destin area where the SEC meetings are continuing, and more coaches are having opportunities to speak with the media, and we're hearing some things from Greg Sankey. But the bigger news is coming from Capitol Hill, Dan, where a bipartisan law is being considered, which would have far-reaching effects on the future of college athletics.
Yeah, it's a pretty complicated and extensive really bill, and I have some doubts about, you know, when you get into the TV rights and stuff, you know, trying to convince conferences to pool all their TV rights and things. Like it feels like it would be like, I mean, I guess it's a step in the right direction in the sense that it's bipartisan agreement on something.
Yes.
I don't know, but it's
which is big news. Well, period.
I mean, what do you think? Like,
I think some of the proposals I like. I mean, some are what we've heard. You know, the 5-year plan, if you will, the 5-for-5 rule. Now, I didn't see anything in that proposal that has any age specifications. Did you?
No, it's.
I think this one is just straight 5 years play five.
Limiting athlete eligibility to a maximum of 5 years. I mean, the big four rules that ESPN sort of drilled. The big four takeaways from the Protect College Sports Act. Which was written by Ted Cruz, who's a senator from Republican senator from Texas, and Maria Cantwell, who's a Democratic senator. They co-wrote this bill, limiting athletes to transferring schools only one time without penalty, limiting athlete eligibility to a maximum of 5 years, prohibiting former professional athletes from playing in college, and prohibiting schools from poaching a coach.
How about that?
From
Lane
another school.
Kiffin, the Lane Kiffin rule.
But that's even like,
I don't know about that.
Well, hold on though. But that's not preventing coaches from leaving. So it's just a matter of like.
But the way I read it, it said coaches couldn't leave before the season ends.
Okay,
right?
Okay. But so you're forcing Ole Miss to keep a coach that they know is leaving for LSU after the season is over, or Ole Miss has to fire him. Like if you
like I said, I'm not keen on that rule. I'm really interested in the.
Does that strike you as a big problem right now in college athletics?
No, it doesn't.
The thought that at the during or after seasons, coaches can negotiate with other schools to consider going somewhere else. Like
they do it. Does anyone who has a job anywhere are they prevented from pursuing other jobs or being prepared to move to other jobs?
Now, if you want to say coaches can only change jobs once every 5 years without penalty, because that's what players suddenly have to do. Like, I'm not mean that.
Well, the players have an out. The players have a couple of outs. One, if their coach leaves. If their coach leaves, then they can transfer. So, I mean, they've got another option. If their coach leaves, they can transfer. Look, I mean, that's the same thing that that Tubbs proposed. Bill would have done was limited it to one with some exceptions, one transfer with exceptions.
And the thought of, like, even if you didn't get the Big Ten or the SEC to buy into the idea of pooling the rest of the conferences into one larger media package. I mean, there might be some appeal to the thought that, like, there's strength in numbers, and so if you're the Big 12 or the ACC or the new Pac-12, the thought that you could have a better media rights deal.
Well, didn't
if you were packaged with a lot of other conferences as opposed to trying to negotiate by yourself. I mean, it's kind of the same thinking behind, like, if you're the benefit of being in a conference versus being Notre Dame. Like, if you think you can get a better deal as one of 14 or 16 teams in a league, then that makes sense for you. I wonder for some of these conferences if you could make a better deal by being one of six or seven conferences that this you know, streamer, you know, if you want to package a deal with ESPN or Netflix or Apple or some you know, content provider, it's like you could, you know, you maybe it's more attractive to be part of a larger group than it would be to be by yourself trying to negotiate this.
I don't see the SEC and the Big Ten wanting to pool with anybody else.
Maybe it's different coming from Congress, limiting eligibility, limiting transfer eligibility. We've seen that be sort of a legal minefield,
right,
in the past.
Well, if it's a federal law,
then
that's going to make it tougher to fight that. And I think that's been the concern of things, you know, different states being able to take things to court in different states. I mean, it depends. I still like the idea that we had talked about. Nobody's asked us yet, that at least they haven't asked me, about the idea of initial transfer. Have a player need to stay at a place for a couple of years. They can transfer. Yeah, that one seems to make more sense to me, but I don't hear much talk of that.
To me, if you're prioritizing limiting transfers, if you think players transfer too much, I'm more bothered by the idea of freshmen and sophomores leaving as opposed to sticking it out at the place they chose out of high school. You know, if you're going to provide exclusivity or you're going to try to limit transfers, I would say, yeah, my idea has always been maybe you are giving your exclusive D1 eligibility to the school you signed with out of high school for 2 years or 3 years. And I don't know if the out would be financial or if it would be, no, they have your rights, and if you don't want to play for them, you got to drop down or you got to go play at the JUCO level. You know, it's like a team having your draft rights almost. Like, you know, but to me, I mean, because it just feels like the thought of keeping fourth-year juniors, right, and seniors, it's like, well, you got to stay at this place for another year. You got to stick it out because –
No, I mean, look, if you're eligible to be drafted like you are in baseball after your third year or when you turn 21, why not have that? Okay, then you can do that. That would be, I think, fairer.
And I think it also incentivizes athletes to stay eligible and to make it to your fourth year and your fifth
and graduate.
Year.
Go ahead and graduate. If you graduate, then you can transfer.
And not only do you get the degree, but you also get the possibility of hitting the open market a couple of times.
I mean, we've seen players that it's not terribly uncommon graduate in 3.5 years. And that would give them, you know, 2 years where they could, you know, they'd be able to transfer.
And there are players that would get, I mean, the players who get the short end of the stick in a system that reforms the first couple of years of your transfer eligibility would be players that want to renegotiate after year one, right? Players who go, fresh. Sebastian Williams Adams is a local example where it's like, that's a guy who had a freshman year where he started every game, was within his rights to renegotiate with his current school or hit the open market. Hit the open market, he's going to Vanderbilt.
And this proposed bill would still allow them to do that. What we're talking about would be it until he graduates or his coach leaves.
And I think the thinking there is probably some thinking that if you only have one transfer available, you're likely maybe in
you're less likely to do it immediately. Yeah, maybe early on.
Maybe basketball players because they have options outside of college basketball if they're really unhappy about their system or their situation. Football players, I feel like, would be less likely to utilize it. If you only got, you know, one shot, right? Like, you're probably not going to use it really early without a – again, you need
to have other options. I mean, that's the thing. And in basketball, you're right. You may have options. Now, I will say this, that They're much more stringent. This bill is much more stringent on the professional athletes. And I thought it was really interesting the way it's worded is that players would not be eligible if they played for anything other than prize money. Did you notice that? Yeah. I mean, so that tells me this is aimed more toward golf and tennis and, you know, the Olympic sports, if you will, because it's not prize money that you're playing for, and it's aimed primarily at basketball.
Some people would read that as a way to keep European.
Yes, indeed,
European.
That's what I'm saying. It appears to be aimed at basketball,
and almost harkening back to a system in the past where it was very difficult for players who came up in the European pro system to switch gears and become college athletes.
I would think if you could show that you only got expenses covered, you'd probably still be okay.
You know,
anything above that. But I thought it was really interesting how they did specify prize money was okay. That would allow a Jackson Koivin to be able to participate in professional tournaments, keep the money, and still play in college. If I'm reading that right.
And I guess it's still unsettled law about foreign student athletes and NIL. Mm-hmm. Like, I mean, that's still something.
I don't know the answer there.
I believe players are still advised, like, hey, you're on your own if you want to. Like by the letter of the law, student visas have a set amount of money that you're supposed to be able to earn, and sometimes NIL deals can exceed that, and it becomes a question of whether or not anyone's going to enforce those sorts of things. If it can survive legal challenges, I think that there are elements of this that would be welcomed. I think no one's going to be happy with all of it. I think people are going to pick and choose things that they find particularly objectionable about it. The coaching poaching thing is.
I'm really surprised that this was. I mean, who was. Where did this one come from?
Is it Lane Kiffin being very angry that he's not? I mean, but he took the LSU job. Like, it's like he's upset that he wasn't allowed to stay.
But he said in Destin that Ole Miss would have a national championship if they'd let him stay on and coach.
I don't know. Like that's one where sometimes there's like
there are writers on bills or something. I wondered why is that a big deal.
Sometimes there is an alternate universe of sports fans and priorities, and I guess making sure coaches can't leave.
What that prevents schools that know they're making a change from being able to try to get somebody. I mean, what is the point of that? I really don't understand the point of that. But yeah, we'd love your thoughts on the Protect College Sports Act, I believe, is the name of the bill. So we'd love your thoughts on that. From Destin again, Kirby Smart. Kirby Smart has come out. Now, he's the guy now. With Nick gone, Kirby is, I guess, the spokesperson, the spokesman for SEC and especially SEC football coaches, saying he wouldn't have a problem with the SEC breaking away and just having its own championship. That would be just fine.
If they can't come to an agreement,
right. Right.
If they I'm not sure if you were finishing that.
No, I mean on the playoffs and on why are we playing 9 conference games?
His thinking is if college football can't come to a working agreement on the rules, then maybe a conference decides, all right, we're gonna set our own rules and we're just gonna crown a champion. Because if conferences have separate rules,
right,
and if conferences have like if things are allowed and not allowed league by league. The thought that because you can't agree on a playoff format, which is really what this is about. I mean, all this posturing is like it's about ESPN and Fox not wanting.
It's
not,
amazing, not isn't it, that the SEC seems to be in step with ESPN?
Some of it's probably actually about like what coaches and administrators want, and that if it's a larger playoff, we can.
Yeah, but
easier to get in.
If you did go conference only, then hey, we're already in the playoff when the season starts. Whatever. I mean, so thus far there haven't been any earth-shattering stories coming from Destin.
Well, here's the Kirby quote. Quote, I've said this for a long time to our president. I've been a huge advocate that if we can't find rules that everybody plays by, then we should play our own.
Yeah.
I'm not afraid of that. I'm not afraid to break away and say that our conference is strong enough to go out and play, unquote. I mean, and I – let's see here. Let's – who was the other – was it – that was a week after
– Georgia's president.
The president of Georgia,
right,
said that he likes the idea of sort of a breakaway, like
– he wants to secede.
Yeah. I mean, not the
– oh, okay.
I mean, I just – It seems like it wouldn't be like the thought that you can't agree on a playoff and that's the solution.
Would ESPN be as excited about the SEC if the SEC were its own thing and not part of the rest of college football?
Yeah, and I mean, I get that like we all can't necessarily agree on what the playoff should look like.
We all can't agree on a lot of things.
I don't know, but it would. I think it would put a dent in the sport as a whole if that's how the playoff went down. If the postseason was
that,
I mean, it was I think the conversation about split national champions pre-BCS tended to overshadow a lot of what was going on at the end of the season, you know, mm-hmm. sort of and you thought you had a solution there and if you're moving away from that and towards I mean, I guess you could see. Would the SEC stop at 16 if it became about?
I think there would be some schools dying to jump.
Yeah,
you know, on the train.
I mean, if you're talking about like a 32 or 48 team SEC,
yeah,
maybe it gets a little bit less ridiculous. But
or at least a 24. You know, there'd be plenty of teams going, well, you need to get to 24 so you can have two 12-team leagues, play a full schedule there, and then have it be more representative. So,
and I don't know the answer on the playoff thing. I mean, my sense is if you want a small playoff, the number should probably be like eight.
Eight.
Yeah.
Yes.
Like let
should.
It go. Because if you gave a committee eight shots at it, they're probably going to pick the best team and probably the second best team, right? Like given eight chances,
I would say they get at least half of them right.
Yeah.
So you should get at least the four best teams if you have eight.
So yeah, my options, like my preference would be eight or
16. I don't like the bias.
No. Here's my thing. If you want to go small playoff, the number's eight. If you want to go big playoff,
you're
shortening the season and getting rid of conference
championship
games.
Well, I mean, I know your thing is, too, and let every conference champ be guaranteed a spot in there.
Put, 11 conference champions and 21 at-larges and play and then one weekend trims it to 16.
Mm-hmm.
Like and that kills conference championship game weekend, but the trade-off is,
you know, you
acceptable.
You can get it, you know, if you want to take a week off between the semifinals and the finals, you do it in 6 weeks.
You could.
It's still 6 weeks, and you've got the month of December to go through, and that way you still can get done. You could get done by the middle of January, not February, where we're looking at right now with 16.
And 32 is probably too many, but so is 24.
I can see seasons in which the number 16 team can knock off the number one team. A lot of times you can't, but there have been seasons. But I think a 16 is going to be more competitive than a 24.
As a viewer, we've now had a couple of these expanded playoffs, and I have not watched them thinking, oh, this field needs to be bigger, and we need more of these games, especially early. Like those opening round games, I have not watched this thinking, oh, man, like – and I know people would say, well, there have been good teams left out in a 12-team playoff the last couple of years. I mean, it seems more about the ability to create more content and to have more
it's all about creating
more money. Yeah, programming to sell, and it's like, okay, for that purpose, then sure, then you know what? Then grow it to 32 or whatever. But if it's about a format that picks the best possible playoff, you know, it feels like we're going in the wrong direction by trying to grow this thing and by threatening to blow the whole thing up if we can't agree on what number it should look like.
We're just underway here on the Wednesday edition of The Drive. Jason must be vacationing for a couple of days before the regionals. Have not heard from him. We should have Adam Cole with us a little later, but you're welcome to join us. 334-321-1390. And at some point here in the show, we're going to give away another pair of tickets to the big match coming up in less than 2 weeks on June 9th between Argentina and Iceland. Soccer at Jordan-Hare. So just stay tuned. We will let you know when it's time for us to be giving away a pair of tickets. So stick with us here on the Wednesday Drive.
This is Coach Stephen Pearl, and you're listening to The Drive with Bill Cameron.
Call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email us at thedrive@espnau.com.
Welcome back into the Wednesday Drive. Bill and Dan here in the studio. I'd love for you to join in.
I feel bad about. I mean, maybe it's because Jason's not here. It's like, I mean, it's football heavy early on here. You know, we talked a little bit about
the SEC meetings are going on, and you got the bill proposed. Yeah. Well, I mean, so you can't help that. But yeah, it'd be great to have Jason in here talking about the Auburn regional coming up starting Friday.
And you're in position to. I mean, you can help.
Jason said we can check with him by phone in about 5 minutes.
Okay, yeah, we'll call. I figured we'd be able to check in with our good buddy. JC and preview the baseball series a little bit because a lot of interest in the number four team in the country and a team that I think a lot of folks believe has a chance to make some noise in the baseball postseason between this regional and potentially being at home for the super regional if they can advance. I know folks have said the Nebraska regional is like one of the tougher ones. You know, three of the four teams are in the top 25, but Auburn's. Auburn's in a pretty good position right now heading into regional play.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, a couple of people said that they feel Auburn is one of the more manageable regions in the country. So, but you can't take anything for granted here in the regional.
So now that we've got confirmation, we'll talk to Jason
some baseball here in just a few minutes.
In the next segment, there is a little bit more football news.
Oh, indeed. As the SEC Network today unveiling the first 3 weeks of the entire SEC schedule. So we know the times. We knew the games. Now we know the times. And I think good news for Auburn fans, the first 3 weeks when you know it's extremely hot. Of course, we knew game one, you're not going to have to worry about the temperatures on the field because the game's being played in Atlanta. And we knew that we knew that's a 2:30 game.
I've always thought that like the importance of because you hear Auburn fans, you know, it's like, oh, Jordan-Hare at night, and it's like the difference between a 2:30 game and a 6 o'clock game in November is fairly negligible. I feel like I've seen some of the best atmospheres ever at Jordan-Hare Stadium.
But September is a different story.
I would even say like I've seen situations where later in the season, like 7 o'clock crowds can get tired, and it's you know it starts to especially for a big game.
It can get pretty darn cold.
It can get cold. So not saying like I mean, you know I think for a big game, Jordan-Hare tends to bring it whenever you don't want to play these games at 11 when you get the feeling.
I don't want to play home games in the middle of the afternoon in September.
And you probably don't want to play it at 2:30 in September unless it's a big. I think back to those 04 and 06 LSU wars, but. Florida's first visit since 2011. We get the confirmation that ESPN will broadcast that game at 7 o'clock. Night game,
it's
week
7
three.
Eastern, right?
Is it 7 Eastern, 6 Central?
I think it's 6 Central.
Okay.
Yeah.
But it's a night game for Auburn against the Florida Gators to start conference play. Southern Miss
is the 6:30 or 6:45.
Yeah, is going to be at night as well. So
that's good news. Yeah. That's good news, Auburn fans. Your first couple of home games under Alex Golish are going to be played in the evening. Now, it's not going to be dark. I mean, you know, at 6:30 or at 6 o'clock in September, but it will be much more tolerable and I think enjoyable than it would be if you're playing in the morning or early afternoon.
And there is some unhappiness around the conference.
And somebody's got to play some of those unfavorable times.
How about a press release in the last hour from Arkansas AD Hunter Yurecek? This was posted to his Twitter account just before 3 o'clock today. It's long. I'm not going to read the whole thing. Maybe I will. Extremely concerned and displeased about the recently released kickoff times for our football program in consecutive weeks this September and the impact it will have on the well-being of our student-athletes. ESPN has set our game
at... Is that physical or mental?
Doesn't get into it. He does get into it a little bit. ESPN has set our game at Utah for 9:15 Central Time on September 12th.
Well, that is 7:15 Utah time, Hunter.
And even Central, maybe they're the Mountain Time Zone, right?
Well, so it's 8:15.
It's 8:15. Yeah, okay.
It's not like it's the middle of the night there. That's not the problem. And Hunter knows that's not the problem.
We anticipate returning to campus at approximately 6 a.m. on Sunday, September 13th, although that's their decision, I think, not to stay the night in a hotel and get home the next day, followed by an 11 a.m. home kickoff against Georgia just 6 days later.
6 days. This is not a bunch of 40-year-olds. Even though the 24 rule hasn't been applied yet. 6 days later for college athletes to be ready to play a game.
So just 6 days after Sunday, these players have to be ready to play
an 11 o'clock game. No, the problem is you're playing at 11 o'clock. You've got Georgia coming in, and you're having to play them at 11 o'clock, and you know your crowd is not going to be as hyped as they would be if you played it later.
And I think it's the same disappointment that if Auburn,
you've got a big opponent coming in and you have an early game, those early games are terrible.
What would we be talking about right now if the news from this decision
that
was
Florida game was at 11 o'clock?
Auburn, Florida was at 11 a.m.
We'd be raising hell. Absolutely.
And it would have nothing to do with player safety.
No, absolutely not.
It would have nothing to do with people's well-being.
This is not, it's not what you want. You want to play your road games as early as possible. You want to play your home games later. That's just a fact.
Hunter Yurecek continues. This assigned schedule will cost our student-athletes nearly a full day of rest and recovery that they would otherwise have available to them. This is not simply a competitive disadvantage. It's a genuine welfare issue for the young men who represent our program and contribute greatly to the bottom line of our television partners. This type of scheduling is unacceptable and demonstrates a clear neglect for the well-being of college athletes.
I love it when I hear someone say it's unacceptable. It's obviously not. Because there it is. I mean, it's been put out there. It was plenty acceptable, apparently, to ESPN.
So, let's see here. I am confident there are not many other programs in the SEC that would be placed in a similar position, and I will not quietly accept it for our program. I have formally requested that the SEC office and ESPN aggressively pursue an alternative solution for one or both kickoff times during these consecutive weeks. The focus must be on the well-being of the game's participants, not the bottom line of our media partners.
Well, considering we don't have the rest of the schedule and we don't know who's playing at 11 a.m. on Saturdays for the rest of the year, he can say that. But I can assure you there will be some teams that play night road games the week before they play an 11 o'clock home game next week.
And it was Arkansas's decision, while Hunter Yurecek was AD, I believe,
to schedule a
game at Utah. And so, I mean, I don't know. Like, I get the disappointment that...
Well, you know what? And here's the other thing.
When you're one of the teams near the bottom of the league consistently, that the thought that you get 11 a.m. home games.
They had to
more
also
frequently.
Agree on the date. They didn't have to play, I mean, if they knew that Georgia was coming up the week after they played that third week, they could have worked something out and not played Utah the week before. They could have perhaps played them opening week. He probably didn't want to play their opening game on the road at Utah either.
This is totally about not wanting to play Georgia at 11 o'clock.
Absolutely.
Like this is about the outcry when Arkansas fans saw that their big home game against Georgia was going to be an 11 a.m. game. And it's, I mean, I get being angry over it, but like what? what I mean, the SEC is making business decisions here, and you know, when you're looking at games that you got to put at 11, I can understand why they prioritized other games at night over the Arkansas game based on the results on the field for Arkansas. I mean, because if they did it to Auburn, we'd say, well, those are the consequences of performing the way you've performed on the field the last couple of years. And I think for Arkansas, the thought that your home game against Georgia isn't treated like a big event by the SEC, and they're not prioritizing it in prime time, yeah, it's unfortunate. It's got nothing to do with player safety, right? It's got everything to do with being disappointed as a program and a fan base that what you perceived as a really big game isn't being scheduled like a big game by the SEC.
All right. As I look at this, this is interesting. Utah plays Idaho on September 3rd for their opener. And Idaho has an open date the next week. Arkansas and Utah could have opened the season at Utah. That would have been a simple solution right there.
Now, Arkansas's got a game on September 5th. They open at home against North Alabama. North Alabama, yeah.
Yeah, you think they could have swapped those around? Mm-hmm. So yeah, it's all about the Georgia game being at 11 mm-hmm. o'clock.
Yeah.
All right, let's get to our bottom of the hour break because Jason Caldwell's going to join us.
And I mean, if you move the Georgia game up 3 hours,
how much safer are your players going to be?
If we played at
much
two,
more rest they
we're
got.
Playing at 2:30 instead of 11.
You think you're playing Georgia? Your players are going to get a lot of sleep the night before anyway. Yeah.
That's a new one. The idea that we have to play at night for the safety of our players,
so they can get more rest during the day. All right, we'll get to our bottom of the hour break. Stick with us here on the Wednesday Drive. Jason Caldwell joins us on the other side.
On ESPN 106.7
and online at ESPNAU.com.
To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into the Wednesday Drive. Bill and Dan here in the studio. It's getting a little darker outside. It was sunny when we came on mm-hmm. the air, but it is... It's that kind of weather that we have. Hopefully, it will not be a factor this weekend when we've got the Auburn Baseball Regional with Auburn playing Milwaukee. That is scheduled for a noon Friday start. And who better to have on with us our regular Wednesday 4 o'clock guest / co-host, and that's Jason Caldwell from Auburn Undercover. JC, how you doing today?
I hope the weather doesn't come with me. That's all I can say. So we've went out with a group of guys and we played golf for 2 days in North Alabama. And this morning we got 8 holes in and it rained so much they closed the course. And it has pretty much rained all the way back to or towards Auburn this afternoon.
I'm so telling you, it looks like it's about to hit right here. Well, I'm glad you got a little in. I mean, I was hoping you'd get a little more of a break than that, but a lot of excitement about the regional this weekend. Auburn, for the second straight year, the number 4 national seed.
Yeah, you know, you look at it, the schedule you play, the quad one games, I mean, I think it ended up being 33 quad one games they played, or 34. It was a lot. So mm-hmm. just remarkable, the schedule they put together, one games, one series. And it paid off for you again. And so now, can you push the reset button? What's crazy is that, you know, I wrote about this team, but they're 8 days they didn't travel since April 30th. That's
wow.
it. So either coming or going or on the road, they've been 8 days where they woke up at home and were back at home outside of, I mean, not counting a bus trip to Jacksonville State or a bus trip to UAB. To get through that, to have to navigate that, and to play, you know, 4 out of 5 top 10 teams in series. Now, can you push the reset button, get your legs back under you, and get ready to play, you know, postseason baseball?
And Jason, I don't know that there is a team that is better built for regional type situations that Auburn, because of the depth. I mean, we saw it at the SEC tournament. Amazing that in three games, you give up a total of three runs and you use two pitchers per game.
Yeah, if you can keep that recipe, you'll feel pretty good about your chances. And, you know, as Butch Thompson said the other day, he's like, listen, we got to find other guys because sooner or later you're going to run into a game where maybe you just don't pitch as well or somebody has a couple of big swings or whatever it is. So that's been one of the goals this week is to see who was next in line. And I think Griffin Graves is a guy that continues to come on, and you could get him back into his role as kind of that third middle relief guy. Well, you'd really feel good to have Jackson Sanders, L.J. Cormier, Griffin Graves, Ryan Hetzler, get Garrett Brewer back going. Just add a little bit more length to that pitching staff would be a big deal going into this postseason.
And I know we've talked a good bit about him last week when we were talking about snubs from the all-conference team, but my goodness, what a freshman year L.J. Cormier's had.
Yeah. He's just, we're talking about it with a couple of guys. It's like, look, there's guys that just have all the tools, and then there's guys that just know how to pitch.
Mm-hmm.
He's got tools, but he knows how to pitch, too. You look at him, he's continued to gain confidence with the fastball, but his breaking ball and changeup, when you can throw those pitches for strikes and you throw them as well as he does, then it gives you a lot of confidence to be able to throw it in any situation. He's done that. And, man, it's just there's not a lot of hard contact there. And, Butch Thompson likes to say take the sting out of the swing. I don't know that anybody does it better than L.J. Cormier on this staff right now. And, look, Alec Petrovic, the way they pitch is very similar. I think you look in what they do. You'll look up at the end of, a Petrovic game, and it may be three or four strikeouts, and he's gone seven innings and given up, five hits and two runs or one run or whatever, because they understand how to keep people off balance, changing speeds, location, all those things. But Cormier's done a great job of that. And the other part of it is he's fearless. It doesn't matter. He don't care who he pitches against, whatever situation it is. He just comes in and attacks guys. And it's been fun to watch him as he's continued to do those things.
Jason, what can you say about the three teams that Auburn will see or could potentially match up against, depending on how things work out this weekend in the Auburn Regional?
Yeah, you look at Milwaukee first, a team that had some struggles. I think they were 1-10 or 1-11 against Power Four opponents this year, but they finished and won, I think, four or five in a row to end the year. And hey, they beat Wright State twice in their conference tournament, and Wright State's been a pretty good team over the years. So, got some guys that can swing it. But you look and go, hey, confident team that had to have a walk-off home run to win its conference tournament. You never know against a team like that because that's all about confidence for them. But so you look and you go, that's a game you feel like if Auburn does what it should do, that you can take care of business in that game. But they had a couple of big swings, and so they come in here as a pretty confident team, and they definitely have nothing to lose. And so they can throw everybody at you. The other one is a really interesting dynamic. UCF's a really good pitching team. Offense okay, and then NC State's offense is really good, pitching okay. Some of that we know, too, though, at NC State, it's really hard to be a great pitching team in that ballpark because it's about like being at Georgia Tech in Georgia. Not a very big ballpark. Ball flies there pretty good, NC State. So they're going to be a little bit more offensive team. Got a couple of really talented hitters, and then UCF has I think a really deep pitching staff and got a 4.3, 4.4 team ERA. So that'll be an interesting dynamic to see those teams match up.
Any reason to expect any change in the pitching plans? I can't imagine any reason why.
No, I think for Auburn, you now given yourself a chance to get everybody back on a full rest or more than full rest.
Right.
When you look at Jake Marciano, will go from Wednesday to Friday, so he's going to have an extra couple of days rest after throwing, a limited start last Wednesday. Then you look and go, then Andres Alvarez can get back to a Saturday start and have an extra day there. Then Alex Petrovic get back to his Sunday normal start. So, I don't envision anything else. And the good thing about Auburn is is that there's not really a one and there's not really a three.
Right.
You just have a bunch of ones. And so I think because of that, you don't have to worry as much about matchup, maybe saving an ace, all those things. I think you can just say, hey, here's what we do and go do what you do.
Yeah, that's why I said that this team's built for something like this, this type thing. You'd never want to get, and you know, you can't take anything for granted, but you don't want to get into the loser's bracket. But Auburn at least has the depth of arms in case something like that were to happen to be able to handle that better than most.
Yeah, and I think that's where then you would have to have a Griffin Graves,
right,
who has, you know, he's got some midweek experience, obviously starting experience there, but you know, that's where Butch Thompson said, look, you know, you don't have to worry about that in a regular season. You win 2 out of 3 games and you're good. Well, now you know that you're going to have to win 3 games. And so because of that, if you were to have a hiccup, you're going to have to get a little bit deeper into that rotation, into that pitching staff. So, you know, I mentioned Garrett Brewer and some of these guys, you're going to have an Abe Chancellor.
Right.
Some of those guys potentially eat some innings if that were to happen. So, obviously, best case scenario would be to win 3 games and move on, and that's going to be the goal for them. But you know, you'll have to continue to pitch it well, and then listen, they're going to have to be more consistent at the plate. We've seen them be really good at times. Can they consistently be the team that does, you know, the little things? And I think, listen, They're showing more power and doing that stuff, but to excel and to win in the postseason, it's going to mean runner on second, nobody out. You're facing a really good pitcher, hitting the ground ball the right side.
Get him over, get him in.
Mm-hmm. That's it. And, you know, you're going to face some aces. You're going to face some really good pitching, and they haven't handled those guys as well. You know, in really the last part of this season, especially, but really all year. When they face those top quality arms, they've had a tendency to, you know, you look up and it's just 1 or 2 runs. So I think I counted after the loss to after the loss in the SEC tournament that was 6 games this year against SEC teams where they lost a game giving up 3 or fewer runs.
Yeah, that's tough.
You're going to have to be more consistent offensively, and so that doesn't mean hit a bunch of home runs. But you got to do the little things right now. Put the ball in play, move guys up, and you know, they did do a better job of that, I thought, at the end of the year. You're just going to have to get, you know, hey, 2-out hitting is the thing that people always talk about. It's the thing that you can't predict. There's no way to go, hey, go get a bunch of 2-out hits. But you put the ball in play more often than not, then you're going to start to see some fall here or there.
Mentioned Auburn, the number 4 national seed. Jason, as you look around, what other SEC team do you feel has a good setup as far as their regional is concerned?
Yeah, I mean, I think you got to look, obviously, at some of the bigger ones. You look at, I think, Georgia, Texas, there are two that kind of stand out to me. Is got to feel pretty good about those. Mm-hmm. You know, you look at Alabama, and Oklahoma State's a team that could kind of give you a run, but it sure feels like, for Alabama, you're probably not going to throw Tyler Fay in game one. And then I think you have him to potentially pitch up against Oklahoma State in game two. And I think that would probably put you in a pretty good position. But Oklahoma State can swing it.
Yep.
After that, you start looking, and you don't like Oklahoma's chances to go to Atlanta and do much damage there against that Georgia Tech team. They can pitch, but it sure feels like you're going to have to take a lot of offense to win over there.
Mm-hmm. Jason, before we let you go quickly, Big Cat weekend, and then Auburn adds another offensive lineman.
Still there?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. No, yeah, Rance Brown's a guy that I really like, and the reason why, as much as anything, is because I talked to him, you know, one of the times he visited, and his answer to a question was, I know I'm going to have to develop. I'm okay with that, but I'm not going to stop working until I make it to the NFL.
Man.
And if I'm an offensive line coach or a head coach, that's what I want to hear, because offensive line is a developmental position. So I think that's the guy that should check all the boxes that you're looking for up front. And then you're right, a bunch of official visits. It's going to be a really busy weekend for Christian keeping tabs on that while I'm across the street at Plains and Park. So a whole lot of information to check out at Auburn Undercover. So come give us a look.
Looking forward to it, Jason. Yeah, we're up against it. Got to get to our final. Got to get to our top of the hour break. Really appreciate you spending some time with us.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
We'll be back to wrap it up for hour number one. Stick with us.
The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck.
Looking for a home service company you can truly trust.
Well, we'll try to draw him out here during the break, and he'll be with us in hour number two. And don't forget, we'll also be giving away a pair of tickets to the Argentina-Iceland match in hour number two as well. So stick with us here on the Wednesday Drive.
And online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome in to hour number two. It is the it's a wet Wednesday. We used to have a lot of those, seemed like, but not as many lately. But boy, we've gotten some rain over the last few days and looking for some more here in the near future. Again, hopefully it doesn't mess up too much of the baseball that is planned for this weekend, not just here, but all over. But the Auburn Regional will get started Friday at noon. And we're joined here in hour number two of the Wednesday Drive, as we usually are. He's drying out a little bit from the downpour that he just had to go through, and you know, we don't have like a drive up entrance where you can get out and not get wet. So Adam Cole from the Montgomery Advertiser is here with us in the studio, and probably pretty cool, at least for this time of year.
Comparatively drier right now, I would say.
Good.
Just like it was coming down the wrong way the minute I left my apartment,
Yeah,
so
we don't have covered parking for anyone but the super VIPs. You know, the underground parking is, mm-hmm. is only available. So we'll get you in next time. But no, it is the tables have turned a little bit from earlier.
From the drought watch,
yeah.
Which I believe we're still under, because the water table still isn't where it needs to be. But yes, there can be some flooding when you get this kind of rain.
A hot afternoon, right? I mean,
yep.
From a,
like
a couple
mid-summer.
Of hours ago. Yeah.
This is like midsummer is when it's hot, steamy, and the next thing you know, it's pouring.
And hopefully the weather doesn't impact too much baseball this weekend.
No,
not just in Auburn, but around the SEC, because this is such a great weekend for college baseball. Adam, you'll be covering the action at Plainsman Park. And it's like you really hope these teams can get their games in without having to worry about weather delays and rain disrupting things.
If I'm right, I am pulling up the radar now or the forecast.
Well, I hope you are.
But if I'm right, I think Auburn's going to be fine on Friday, should be fine on Friday.
Is it a situation sort of like today where mid to late afternoon?
I do believe. So, no, I know they asked for game two, the night game on Friday, and didn't get it, but they might have lucked out based on my understanding. But, no, it's going to be – it's definitely going to have an impact on the weekend. And, you know, hopefully Auburn lucks out into a situation where they can avoid it themselves. But I think it'll have some impact on the regional, almost, I'd say.
I just got an email from Auburn Athletics just in the last couple of minutes that there are still some single session tickets available. So there's some of those general admission tickets, Auburn with some additional seating here for the regional, and it gets started with that noon game, as we were saying, against Milwaukee. Tell us a little bit about the Panthers, Adam.
I will tell you everything that I have written about them in my little regional previews, which is that they're hot right now.
Yeah, they are.
They've won seven straight, and they, you know, won the Horizon League tournament. I think they were 14-10 in conference play, but I think mm-hmm. finished like 25-31 overall.
Right.
You know, looking at them, I there has not been a lot in particular that stands out to me when I look at the stat sheet and the stat rankings. It's not like they have an overwhelmingly dominant area of play from
they
what
hit
I've looked
it better
at.
Than they pitch it.
Right.
This is what it looks like.
Yeah, and they're hot. And that's about all I've been able to glean from looking at it. But, no, I, it's I think Auburn got one of the, at least in terms of the one seeds, one
more
of the better draws.
I think so.
I'd put them, Alabama, and Texas certainly in that mix.
They should. They're the number one overall seed.
I mean, a lot of people talking about Cal Poly. Yeah, mm-hmm. I've seen a lot of Cal Poly's gonna do it. So
aren't they? They're the three, though.
I do believe they are.
But
the three.
I think they're better. Yeah.
Yeah. So no, they avoided. Like I look at like the Lawrence Regional. Oh my gosh, yeah. KU's gonna have a gauntlet. But no, I think they got
the Auburn's the Auburn Regionals match Nebraska. Yeah. That's a pretty tough regional too.
I think assuming Auburn gets out of this weekend and is hosting a super, like I do think they're going to be hosting Ole Miss or Arizona State.
The thing that gives me the most pause about Auburn's regional is I hate hearing that a coach is retiring after the season because I've seen teams overachieve in those situations before, and knowing that NC State's coach announced that he's retiring at the end of the season after 30 years with the Wolfpack, I've seen teams turn that into something storybook in different sports before. And for NC State, I think their seating is a bit of a surprise.
Their being here, I think, is a surprise. Yeah. I don't think that was a team like Kentucky that you look at the metrics and them on paper and you figured they weren't going to make it in, but I guess that's
pretty much every projection expert would have told you Mercer was getting it over NC State. Like I'd say maybe NC State's not the biggest, because I think some folks are a little bit surprised by Troy's inclusion as well, even though the computer numbers would tell you Troy's an excellent.
Well, you see
mid-major.
A 32-29 record, right. And you think, no, how'd they get in?
Right, but no, I think
at large.
Yeah, but the thought of the inclusion of NC State is one of the surprises of the draw, and that's that NC State UCF game very well could go a long way in deciding assuming Auburn takes care of business, who they've got on Saturday.
Yeah, it's interesting because everybody makes the remark about Avent's retiring, and then you think about 2023 and Southern Miss coming here and Scott Barry and that being his last year. And I haven't gone back entirely to look at that Southern Miss team, but if I'm right, they were the two and they were playing pretty good ball. I don't know if they were in the host conversation. So I just wonder I wonder how it'll balance out between this NC State team. I think it was the worst conference record Avent's had in his 30 years.
It's close. They were 14-16 this year. They went 13-16 in 23, but
okay.
I mean, It's one of the tougher seasons that he's had.
Yeah, so I wonder what the balance is going to be between this team has achieved only this much to this point, but the coach is retiring, and how much are they going to get up to the?
I wonder
point
if that was that, just a reward. It's like, well, here you get to go to this regional.
Yeah, so
stay fairly close to home.
No, but I
you'll play the number four national seed.
You've got, I think you like what you're looking at as Auburn, because none of these teams to me really slug the ball, and I just feel like, for as good as Auburn's pitching has been, I mean, you go back to that Arkansas game in Hoover, and it's like we saw that story so many times this year of you give up two runs. A
couple of homers.
But
yeah, that's all it takes.
You only score one. And I think when I look at it, the biggest threat to me would be Central Florida, not just because they're the two seed, but because their pitching staff has been, I'd say top 30 in the country, And if you find yourself in a pitcher's duel, Auburn's lineup's just been a little inconsistent in that regard sometimes.
Yeah. Well, Jason pointed out just a little while ago that he looked back and saw six SEC games in which Auburn lost when they gave up three or fewer runs.
Mm-hmm.
And that's hard to do these days.
Mm-hmm. No, I went back and looked, and since the bounce back from the skid after that Georgia Tech midweek, they had, I think, 10 games where they scored 10 or more runs. Of course, they went undefeated in those. But then, it was – I think it was eight games in which they let up three or fewer runs, and
they would.
Yeah, no, I've got my numbers all jumbled up. Final answer, they had eight games in which they scored three or fewer runs themselves.
Oh,
they only won one of those,
okay.
And that was the LSU game. There we go. I got there.
Yeah, so, I mean, Butch has talked all year about six. I mean, we talked a little bit yesterday that, if Auburn can get five, you feel really good, because it's just not very common that Auburn gives up five or more runs.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and that's one of the things. Auburn is a team, we've talked about it, Adam. I mean, they're built for situations like this regional, where the more arms you have, the better. And, to be able to go through an SEC tournament, give up three runs in three games, and only use six pitchers to a game, I mean, is almost unbelievable.
And I thought Ryan Hetzler's outing said a lot. I know he gave up two runs, but that's a guy we've only seen so much of him of late. And yeah, gives up two runs in five innings. I mean, nearly has a quality start, you know, out of the bullpen. So. No, like it's you've seen so many familiar arms.
That statistically was the worst performance by an Auburn pitcher.
Right.
In Hoover.
You've only seen so many arms of late because they've had, you know, these guys mm-hmm. that they can lean on, but it's like, you know, they've still got a few pieces out there, you know? So I really think that's going to be the prevailing thing that carries them.
You get the sense this is a team. I mean, we talked about a couple years ago with the Penn, the opener against Penn, and how Auburn immediately found themselves on their back foot in a regional. Like, you don't want to be in that situation. This does seem like the team that could turn that around. If they, even if you were to lose the opener, like, you have enough pitching that you could string together a couple of wins and dig your way out of a loser's bracket. It's much easier by winning the opener.
Sure.
Like, don't try, especially
much easier.
One
don't
seed.
Lose, just win three.
Yeah, just take care of business. But like with Auburn, you have, and I guess that speaks to the depth of the pitching staff, is that not only can they go to, I mean, we've seen Alvarez called upon after Friday didn't go well a couple of times this year to sort of reverse momentum and act as that stopper. And then beyond Alvarez, like, you can keep going with quality starting pitching. So yeah, I think that this is it all starts with that first game and making sure that you're still in the winner's bracket when it's over. But it does seem like if Auburn can, like, this, as you said, Bill, having this many pitchers makes it to where you could seemingly navigate regional play and give yourself a chance to win every single time you're out there.
Well, I mean,
you don't want to be doing bullpen games or all hands on deck emergency sort of situations in must win kind of games. You know, 3-4 games into a tournament, seemingly Auburn isn't going to have to get that kind of desperate until, I mean, several games in, if ever.
Yeah,
in a regional.
The way things are set up, once you get done with the SEC tournament, you're in a double elimination situation in regionals, super regionals, College World Series. And Auburn has the tools. They're built more for this than most teams are. Most teams, you know, are in trouble when they're worried about who's the third guy. Who would be the fourth guy? Auburn's got four. They've got five. I think they've got six. Now, Ryan has shown he can go more than a couple of innings, but my goodness, with what Jackson and LJ have done, I mean, that is a luxury to have.
And LJ's a guy, too, who, you know, Butch has talked about in recent weeks of, you know, maybe we bring out Sanders on a Friday and want to bring him back on Sunday. We haven't seen that yet. I'll be curious, like, when/if we see it this postseason, but I think LJ Cormier is another guy you could do that with, mm-hmm. just with the way he's been going. And of course, he's younger. I'm sure you want to be that much more cautious with that for whatever reason. But he's a guy with just the way that he's pitched. I'm not going to be shocked at all if we see him twice in a weekend this postseason too. So yeah, like you've got, I would say, at least a half dozen really reliable arms. And especially, I mean, I've talked about it before on this show, but watching Ryan Hetzler pitch last year and go from being the closer to being the closer in his own setup man, and sometimes even being his own long relief and setup into that closing save situation, like, to me, what you saw from him in Hoover showed you he's still got that, mm-hmm. you know? And so I think you feel really comfortable saying you've got a half dozen really nice arms that you can put out there on the bump.
Adam Cole from the Montgomery Advertiser with us here in hour number two. Well, phone lines are open. We'd love for you to join us. Anything you want to talk about, we'll get Adam's thoughts on some of the things going on in the world of college athletics as well. The proposed bill, SEC meetings going on down in Destin. Quite a bit we can talk about. Love for you to join us, though, 334-321-1390. And don't forget, sometime here in hour number two, we will give you an opportunity to win a couple of tickets to the Argentina-Iceland match coming up 2 weeks from yesterday, June 9th, over at Jordan-Hare Stadium. So stick with us here on the Wednesday Drive.
The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck. And AU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email thedrive@espnau.com.
Welcome back into the Wednesday Drive. 19 minutes after 5 o'clock here on this Wednesday afternoon. Bill, Dan, Adam Cole from the Montgomery Advertiser here in the studio. And we'll shift gears a little bit and talk a little college athletics. First of all, SEC, Adam. SEC meetings going on down in Destin. Been some interesting comments. I wouldn't say there's been a lot of big news coming out. I mean, but we...
Is the playoff thing just a big game of chicken in your mind? Is it just like, oh, we'll break apart if you don't... You know, it's like, I mean, no one really wants to do that, right? Like, no one really wants to...
Yeah, I'm confused by a lot of it, and I think the most I've seen...
Posturing is a lot of it.
Yeah. I think today what I've seen is Greg Sankey said there would be no news about the playoff coming out of Destin, which Florida, wherever they are in Florida on the beach... but that, and then I forget where I saw it. It was a national outlet, and I think it was John Summerall said this. I may be wrong in that, but there was an SEC coach that basically said the coaches in the conference had agreed to play a 9-game conference schedule, mm-hmm. with the understanding that they would expand to a 16-team playoff. Mm-hmm. And then that didn't happen, which I think that was news today. So that was news to me. But
well, that's what we had thought. Mm-hmm. That's why the conference was going to do that. But it doesn't seem like, you know, the response from some people would be, well, then you should be happy with 24. Mm-hmm. But the SEC,
right,
is not happy with 24.
I've seen them seemingly pretty ironclad at not going to 24. But I haven't. I've read a little bit about 16, and I don't know where the pulse is right now on that for the SEC.
I believe the quote from Eli Drinkwitz today at Media Days was something along the lines of, I remember last year we were told if we went to 9 games, the Big Ten would vote for a 16-team playoff in 2026. And I think we're still at a 12-team playoff. That's Eli Drinkwitz's comment on it. So he thought maybe the SEC was misled by, hey, if you do this, then everyone will agree to a 16-team playoff. The SEC did what they thought they needed to do to get that 16-team playoff. And the Big Ten and some other folks said, well, how about 24? You know, maybe
24 gets more people in than 16.
Number got even bigger, yeah.
Yeah. So I wonder, but thus far, at least, it sounds like the SEC coaches are being solid in their response. It doesn't mean that they all agree with this, because I would imagine there's a coach or two that would go, hey, if there's 24, I got a better chance of getting in there's 16. But I wonder if the ill feelings are toward the Big Ten or a little bit toward the commissioner's office, because who misled them? You know, they have to, it had to be Greg Sankey who convinced him. He's the one that's mm-hmm. wanted the 9-game schedule. There's no question about that.
Yeah, no, I wonder about that, and it's just, I just get curious about where, you know, the SEC being the SEC, right? Like, it's the Power Four, but really we talk about P2 between them and the Big Ten. And, mm-hmm. you know, sitting down and reading about it earlier today when I was looking at what Alex Kolisch, I guess, didn't say about the playoff, like, you know, clearly they're not in the majority by any means. And if anything, they're back against the wall outnumbered. And it's just like, where do you go from here? You know, being the titan that you are of the SEC and you're holding firm at this one thing, like, because as far as I understand it, it's not like you need a unanimous agreement to move forward with this stuff and go a different direction. But where does that lead the SEC? Like, where do they go from here if there's not some sense of agreement on the next, like, playoff expansion step?
Well, that's where you had the Georgia president last week and I guess Kirby Smart today talking about the possibility of breaking away and having SEC rules and an SEC champion at the end of the season and just calling it that. I don't think that's like a positive development for the sport unless that's the, like, if it's the first step towards, all right, we're going to play, like, we're going to have a championship only for teams that are playing by SEC rules. And that could, you know, other conferences could meet the SEC standard.
I can see some ACC schools going, okay, we'll be a part of that.
Exactly.
We'd love to be a part of that.
If it's about having a playoff that meets a certain standard, but yeah, just I think the thought of this thing fracturing and having, you know, with a Fox champion and a Disney champion, like, that doesn't seem like the best best possible outcome here. But it does seem to be a pretty significant stalemate between and I guess, I mean, again, it gets back to more complicated stuff like TV rights and and things like that. But yeah, just it feels like a goofy thing to blow the whole thing up over is like, well, we couldn't agree to how many teams should should be in an expanded playoff. And the thought of going back to a smaller number because you can't agree, right? Like, I mean, even though that's probably the right number, I mean, I've said in the first hour, Adam, I've watched a couple of playoffs in a row now where you kind of think 12 might be too many. You know, it's but we're not going that direction.
And some of it, like with 12 being too many, it's just like I think there's almost more of a drop off in the competition with, you know, the G5 inclusion, which is to say, like, I don't think not including the G5, like, I don't think that's a good thing. I don't. I think there needs to be that level of variety, because then you get into the argument of another fracturing between the P4 and the G5. But I do wonder about at 16. You know, surely there would be more of an addition of Big Ten or SEC or a bit of both. But, like, if you're able to get the right mix of say, G5 in there, like, I wonder how much that could do for just, like, the competitive balance of it. But, you know, then you get into that 24 argument, and I've heard a lot of people talk about it just watering down the regular season. And it's I even wonder about that to an extent, because it's like what is, like, the lowest-seeded playoff team? Like, what's their record in a 2014 playoff at that rate, you know? I don't think we're going to the bowl route of you got to win 6 games to be eligible, like that kind of thing with that few teams. But I think you said earlier, like, a game of chicken. I think really with, like, the thought of the SEC branching off and doing its own thing, like, that is absolutely a game of chicken. Like, there's no way they wouldn't, like, stay.
Yeah, Lee, I sure hope that wouldn't happen.
It would be
awful.
The quotes from the Georgia president are fairly demented, right? I mean, like the thought
of,
like,
well,
I mean, the I want to read, because I don't want to misquote this specific quote. Like, it was last week, right? President Moreland at President Moorhead from the University of Georgia. Let's see here, the Smart's comments came after Georgia President Moorhead told On3 last week that if federal legislation isn't enacted to curb what he's called anarchy in the sport, he's prepared to, quote, be ready to vote on creating an SEC mechanism and SEC rules. That's what we have to do. And then when he was asked about the possibility of breaking away, quote, I think that would be fantastic. I can't imagine the ratings of that happen. Georgia-Alabama SEC championship last year had ratings through the roof. Imagine if that had been for the national championship. I think our fan base is strong across the country. I think we'd have tremendous interest in a situation of that nature. But again, I'm going to be listening to the commissioner, unquote.
There's no way. I know, serious. Yeah. I mean, that is crazy. That is just crazy.
Yeah.
They'd be even bigger. Yeah, no, they wouldn't.
Right. What about when Alabama showed they weren't one of the two? Oh, anyways, that's
yeah. Well, we'll see. I mean, but anyway, that's what's going on down in Destin, or as I saw a couple of other people were putting Dateline Miramar Beach today.
Oh yeah, okay.
Yeah. But meanwhile, we have a bill that has been proposed, the Protect College Sports Act. Which would try to put some guidelines in and grant a small amount of okay, what's the phrase that I'm missing? The giving the NCAA back some limited antitrust yep. exemption. There are a couple of things in there, Adam, that sound very familiar. The 5-year rule. And I didn't see anything in there about age, which I think makes more sense. Just go ahead and put a 5 for 5 and don't worry about the age.
Yeah.
I mean, there aren't going to be very many older players playing, but a 5 for 5. But they want to be much stricter, it appears, with foreign professionals or professionals, period.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, which, you know, to an extent, I mean, like, getting guys who have played in the G League or have signed a summer league deal like that, you know, especially, like, yeah, if they've already played in college and gone pro and want to come back, like, no, that shouldn't happen. I do think the inclusion of, like, the European game, especially, like, in terms of basketball, because, you know,
this is all aimed at basketball. There's right. No question about this.
I wouldn't call it a bad thing for the sport. Like, I just don't. It feels like we've taken a whole new cadence
on
it.
Who is pushing so hard for this? I mean, to exclude the foreign professionals.
I hesitate to say that this is him, but I do think that a lot of this conversation starts when we go back to Charles Bediako and everything Nate Oates had to say coming into this year, because he continued to take that stance on how many European professionals have come over to play college basketball, and it wasn't a problem until he brought it up. And I don't think it's...
Well, the Baylor situation predates that, though, right?
That's true. I mean, James Nagy.
The James Nagy thing would be the one where it's like, because that's the NCAA making a very clear exception for other professional leagues versus the NBA.
Mm-hmm. But he at least went through the NBA draft process, correct?
Yes.
He was not selected, as I remember it. Or was he selected?
Nagy was selected in the draft.
Never
came to terms with an NBA team, I believe, was the way the NCAA sort of viewed, like, someone who came over from, because he didn't play college basketball first, mm-hmm. which was the other sort of contention with Bediako and with RJ Lewis, was that Nagy went through the NBA draft process, was drafted, I think played in the summer league, and then never actually came to terms with an NBA team and decided to pursue college eligibility and, mm-hmm. and got some, and then that turns into like, well, he was a pro in the NBA. And then there have been professionals coming over from European leagues too, which I think folks
And now you've got the RJ Lewis situation. But it appears that there are groups. The NCAA is one. I mean, the NCAA has said they don't want to allow athletes who have received anything more than expenses. This Protect College Sports Act says they don't want to allow athletes who have received anything more than prize money. Now, that's interesting, because that seems to tell me they want to keep the golfers and the tennis players and those, they want to keep those Olympic athletes still in school, but they want to keep out the basketball players is what it seems like.
That's a healthier middle ground, but still, I just think it's barking up a tree it's not that they're barking up the wrong tree. It's just like you don't need to bark up that tree. You don't at all.
I wonder, like, I mean, Bill's question about, like, who's driving keeping
somebody European... has convinced the senators that this is needed. And who is it? I mean, has the NCAA finally been able to convince somebody of something, or is it, you know, some very powerful coaches and administrators?
It's interesting. Like, who wants fewer European mm-hmm. pro? And I mean, maybe it's, I would imagine it's coaches. Maybe it's people paying, you know, to sign these players. But like, I would think that it's coaches would rather not be facing European pros on other teams, and so like, making it tougher for European pros to come into college basketball would be something of a solution there if you want to. Or, I mean, if you want to take a harder stance on professionals in general.
Like, hey, I went back and looked again. I think as I read through this is a lengthy amount of information to read on this Protect College Sports Act. It looks like it would eliminate players who played pro in one sport from playing in another. Mm-hmm. It would eliminate guys like, Chris Winkie and
Brandon Whedon.
Yeah,
I always think about Brandon Whedon.
I mean, because if it says you signed a contract, you received money for play, then you're ineligible.
J.R. Smith came back and played college golf.
I forgot about that.
After his NBA career was over, guys like that would not be able to do that. I wonder too if it's about would he be eligible to play at all? I think former pro would be like his clock would have already. Started and stopped. I wonder too if it's the sort of thinking like that you're not comfortable with college basketball being just a feeder for the NBA, right? And so it's like, well, maybe there should be fewer players who meet the qualification of pro athletes coming into college basketball in an attempt to collect NIL money and then go to the NBA I don't know. You know, the thought that like. I mean, I guess it is a way to give more opportunities to American high schools.
I was going
to
say that's exactly what I was thinking. Is I guarantee you there are a lot of high school coaches that would love to see more of their players get an opportunity and feel like this is cutting into that.
And maybe college basketball coaches that like to recruit out of the high school ranks would think that like this is a way to preserve that aspect of the game while eliminating some of the other avenues to acquire talent.
Like, well, it'll be interesting to see if they can come up with 60 bipartisan votes to pass this bill. I sort of doubt it because it's virtually impossible to get 60.
Well, what we've had
period.
Have we had two versions of this before or one version of this before? I know there's already been one bill at least proposed.
The Tubbs bill?
Yes.
Yeah, and it flopped.
Right, right. So, I don't know. And then it's like I looked through. Admittedly, I've pulled up the SparkNotes article version of mm-hmm. looking at the bill, but it's like, you know, looking at the bullet points, you know, I think we've talked about it a bit before, but, you know, I'd want to see more regulation, not on necessarily like the dollar amount of it, but just like the, you know, the NIL deals that these kids sign out of high school. Like, I don't understand why there's not, you go through all of this stuff and it feels like, yeah, the transfer portal is a significant piece of it. I know that element's in there of, you know, you get one free transfer, you know, before a penalty, but like, why not make these kids sign a 2-year min?
That's exactly what we were saying. I mean, it'd be better to have them, commit to more up front and yeah. then be able to do something, and then be able to move.
Right. Like that to me is how you inhibit, you know, the chaos of that portal. Is it's less so the, you know, they're free to get in whenever they want. It's more so let's front load this stuff and let's have them at a home, you know?
All right. We are getting to the bottom of the hour. Go ahead and roll the music, Dan, because we're going to give away a pair of tickets to the Argentina-Iceland soccer match a week from this coming Tuesday, June 9th, 7:30 at Jordan-Hare Stadium. We're going to have Adam pick a number between 1 and 9, Adam.
7.
All right, our 7th caller is going to win a pair of tickets to Argentina-Iceland. 334-321-1390. You know, if you're fast enough, you can get through multiple times. I've done this before. I've been caller 1, 4, and 7. One time on a contest. Ooh, I see three lines lit right now.
Right.
All right. We'll give you the winner when we come back here on the Wednesday Drive. Who is joining us here on the drive? Will, congratulations.
Thank you very much. Very excited, guys. Three busy signals.
Cool.
Congratulations. Again, sorry to everyone who called in who could not get the tickets. We have more tickets to give away later this week.
We have a pair of tickets each day, and On the Line has a pair of tickets. So there will be 4 more pairs of tickets that you know, folks have an opportunity to win before the end of the week.
Will, you a fan of the beautiful game?
I love it. Played it up until they told me I wasn't good enough to play anymore.
Oh, that's cool. You excited about, like, for folks who are more casual fans or not soccer fans at all, I've really been trying to sort of, like, the specialness of Messi coming to, on top of just Jordan-Hare Stadium hosting a World Cup friendly right before America hosts the World Cup, but the thought of Lionel Messi playing at Jordan-Hare, like, it is a rare occasion to see a Michael Jordan. I mean, in America, Tom Brady would have that sort of cachet. I mean, it is a generational athlete, one of the best to ever play the sport. And it's got to be very exciting that you get to see him.
Absolutely, generational talent. This opportunity does not come around very often, especially to Alabama.
Well, Will, we're
excited about this.
We're thrilled to be sending you to Jordan-Hare Stadium in just under 2 weeks to see Argentina and Iceland.
Yeah, thanks again, Will. Really, congratulations and. Hope you enjoy it, and again, congrats on being that 7th caller. That was a blast from the past.
Oh man, that was fun. Bill was sharing Bill was sharing stories about about the switchboard back in the day.
When if you made it double digits, you're putting the entire location in jeopardy.
I'll tell you something else. We had for anyone wondering how radio contests go behind the scenes, I think that was Adam Cole's first time in the studio for
those phones lit up pretty quick.
Next caller, and he can verify that we went through.
We did. Dan went through it, and he went through it with vigor. That was I might have been giggling a little bit.
But congratulations to Will. Yeah. And again, if Auburn can make it through the regionals,
what a crazy time that's going to be, because the regionals could be Saturday, Sunday, Monday, and the Supers could be, right?
That gauntlet of Auburn hosting Super Regionals, feeding right into a World Cup game, and potentially your team playing in the College World Series right after that. Granted, that's not local, but just, I mean, the activity in Auburn of a Super Regional and then a World Cup friendly either the next day or 48 hours well, after your Super Regional ended.
Yeah, I mean, even if you're playing Friday through Sunday and you don't have a two-game sweep, just the wildness of what it's going to be like on Sunday, getting ready for that mm-hmm. Match on Tuesday night. I mean, how many people are going to be in town?
I'm blown away at the, I guess I'm zooming out a little more, but the fact that there's a college town in the country that has that much stuff going on in the first uh-huh. 2 weeks of June is just right. uh-huh. mind-blowing to me.
Like people are making a big deal about, so if the NBA Finals goes to a Game 6, then New York could have Game 6 of the Finals the same day as France is playing a World Cup game at the Meadowlands. Hmm. And France is the favorite to win this year's World Cup, or one of the top two or three favorites. So it's like you could have a pretty massive sports right. day happening in
a couple of pretty big international.
But it's New York City.
Worldwide.
And technically,
events.
I mean, you're in two states at that, right?
Yeah, you're right. I mean, the Meadowlands is Jersey, but still, like, it's a massive.
Yeah, that's not this community.
It's slightly different when the thought of a super regional and then maybe either the next day or 2 days later hosting a sold out World Cup friendly. Adam, I don't know if you've seen like the hotel rates for.
Oh, Dan was checking yesterday.
I'm
Googling.
Check, you know, Monday, Tuesday, whether toward the 8th and 9th.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, look around the area at hotels and other sort of ways to accommodations, because it is like folks will be in town. Like there are.
I tell you what, we're gonna zoom out. I'm looking June 7th through the 10th.
Yeah,
I'll zoom out that much.
Yeah, and
it's amazing. I mean, yep. Nothing like that has ever happened in this area at this time of year.
And certainly for a first couple of weeks of June.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Situation. This time of year, never.
Yeah. It's like when your town is in the middle of an eclipse, right? It's like when your town's like, oh yeah, this is, you know, we have perfect eclipse views, and there's just not an empty room in the community. I imagine for super regionals, like that team's got to figure out,
yeah,
kind of like whoever, if Auburn wins, like the team Auburn's facing is going to have to figure out where they're staying for a couple of nights.
And you figure NC State and UCF are going to bring a few fans.
That's this weekend. Yeah,
super regional, whoever it is. I mean, Nebraska, Ole Miss, Arizona State, they've got some fans.
Nebraska traveled earlier yeah. this year.
Well, I'm sure they would. I mean, this is a big deal for them if they get out of the regional. But yeah, this is going to be something.
So really exciting next couple of weeks, and I mean, it, especially since football and men's basketball takes up so much of the bandwidth. Understandably, mm-hmm. like we talk about them, and it's, you know, they're when the seasons are going on, and in the build up to the seasons, and in the aftermath of the seasons, it's a very big deal. But to have college baseball in the spotlight the next couple of weeks. And then, of course, Auburn hosting that Road to 26 game in the meantime, and then the World Cup right after it. Which, I mean, I'm really interested to see how much, how much excitement and is for this World Cup compared to ones that are maybe tougher to watch on TV because of the scheduling. Or, I mean, I'd blocked the fact that the last World Cup was during football season because it was played in the Middle East because right. of the weather. Right, like that was the thing we did 4 years ago in November and December, which it's much tougher to follow in America while college football and the NFL are going on. Like it is much tougher to give your full attention to a World Cup on the other side of the world while that's happening. But like this is, by the way, did you see the story that I guess because Fox was agreeable to moving that World Cup 4 years ago, they got like a discounted rate to broadcast this one.
No, I didn't see that.
And FIFA probably cost themselves north of $1 billion in rights fees.
Is that a lot?
I mean, I guess it was that important to move.
I mean, if you spent that much time digging through the couch cushions, you'd get there in what, 5 decades?
Adam Cole gives that much to trick or treaters, right? Like, that was the story about because these World Cup, like this World Cup. Did not go to the open market for media rights in the United States because Fox got an extension because they were willing to they were flexible about moving the last one to November, December. If this World Cup had gone to the open market, it's especially with it being in North America, like the thought of what a streamer or a broadcast network. Like if it had been a competitive right. bid for this,
no, there's no telling.
No telling what people would have wanted to show.
Want to get a call before we get to our final break? 334-321-1390, and we're going to it blind. So who've we got here?
Caller, you're on the air.
Hey, can you hear me, guys?
It's gotcha.
Brian from Jupiter.
Hey, Brian. We already gave the soccer tickets away.
I already have mine.
Okay. All right.
Wow. Good for you.
No, I was going to ask. I was going to ask a question about that. Actually, what are the chances of? Because I'm actually, you know, we're coming up for the game. My son is a huge soccer fan, a huge Messi fan, so we're excited for it. But Dan, or Bill, you were mentioning, what's the chances of us playing on Sunday? Provided we make the Super Regional, then I might drive up Saturday night and try to get tickets to the Super Regional. Is Sunday guaranteed, or is that the third game?
Well, we don't know. Yeah. I mean, if it's a Saturday through Monday, then that would be game two. If it's Friday through Sunday, that would be the if necessary game.
I would think that Monday, Tuesday, you'll start getting TV matchups for next week's Super Regional. So early next week, we'll know for sure. It's not guaranteed because right. Auburn could play a Friday, Saturday, Sunday series that's over before Sunday. Auburn could play Saturday, Sunday, Monday, and then mm-hmm. and in which case, if you're Saturday, Sunday, Monday,
then you're playing Saturday.
Yeah, it would be guaranteed that there's mm-hmm. a game too. You'll know. There's no way of knowing now. We'll know when we know the 16
right.
teams and Super Regionals, and ESPN sets the TV matchups.
Okay, cool, good. No, I'm excited for it. I actually told my wife as soon as they announced them, I said I don't know if where they're going or not, or if I can get tickets, but I said book the hotel room. Mm. So
yeah,
we had
smart.
Our hotel rooms booked before they even, yeah. also, one real quick thing. I just want to give kudos to Adam Cole. I think he's a great addition to you guys' lineup. I love Adam. I have not read your writing, but I don't know if your voice is great for Radio Man.
Thank you.
You have a very calm, soothing voice. And he's been a great addition to the show, guys. But anyways, thanks for taking the time.
Good hearing from you, Brian.
The public has spoken, Adam. Yes. What do you think of that, huh?
We need a calming influence yeah. here on the drive.
Award-winning writer, Adam Cole, of course, right. as well. Don't forget.
We'll be back for our final segment, so stick with us here on the Wednesday Drive.
This is Jessica Samuel with Opelika Power Service.
U.com. To be a part of the drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email thedrive@espnau.com.
Final segment on the Wednesday drive. Sun's come back out.
Hey.
We got a nice downpour that affected Adam. Dan and I got here when it was dry, and it's not necessarily dry, but it's not raining, it looks like, as we leave here in a few minutes. So that's good. Again, fun weekend coming up with the regional here, and regionals going on all across the country this weekend. Adam will be over at the park covering that. Adam, let everybody know what all you have going, how they can follow it all.
Yeah, no, I mean, great day today as far as just getting built out for the postseason in terms of just getting some exclusive baseball stuff mm-hmm. that you guys will be able to see over at MontgomeryAdvertiser.com. And then, two, you know, we haven't forgot about this World Cup friendly either. There's a couple other things coming down the pipe, previewing that. You know, you'll see those in a couple weeks. But, yeah, if you're looking to find that stuff and everything else as far as game coverage that we'll have over there, just head to MontgomeryAdvertiser.com and click that sports drop down and click on Auburn and you'll have what you need. And you know, if you're looking for me, just search Cole Reporter anywhere on social media and you'll have me wherever you're looking for me.
I had a quick call from Mitch there. He's not, you know, we don't have time to get to him on the air, but he was asking about sort of like the merch and stuff to give away that will be available for the Road to 26.
Uh-huh.
I have to imagine Auburn will have lots of stuff.
Lots of
memorabilia.
I'm sure.
Available for sale in and around the stadium.
If not, then they're really, really missing out. So, yeah, it's hard to believe that there wouldn't be.
Stadium's full. I think you're going to want to be selling souvenirs to some of those folks.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And Adam, this weekend, I mean, Auburn's got football official visitors coming in while the regional's going on. I think that's probably a good thing as well.
That's a pretty timely thing. I know baseball last year, it was for baseball, but I know with the portal opening, they had a really big recruitment weekend with that regional last year. Baseball did, and you know, I would imagine getting some football kids into Plainsman Park, especially with just, you know, it's grown again. You know, they've added on some additional seating. Like, you're going to see another environment. But, no, it should be a big weekend all around for sure.
Adam, really appreciate it. It's always great to have you in, man.
Yeah, no, I appreciate y'all having me.
And that's going to wrap things up. Again, we have more tickets that we'll give away for the soccer match over the next couple of days. They also have some tickets on the line, so just tune into both shows. You could, you know, maybe you could win a pair. But that's going to do it for the Wednesday edition of The Drive. Ferg tomorrow?
Should be. Yep.
All right. Hopefully Justin Ferguson will join us, and you will as well. But that's going to do it for today. Have a good one, everybody. We are out of here.